Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 26th of April, Anno Domini 2014. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. What happened?
I'm having headphone issues.
Oh, good for you.
And it's just the wire just right that it went. Whoa! spiked my ears out.
We are tiny bit frazzled as the internet connection just came back, and I mean just came back on. We thought for a minute we were actually going to have to know stuff.
That hasn't happened since the '80s.
And I'm not sure I could do it anymore. but we are set up with internet and everything else. So let's start with the news. Cable companies, you've been put on notice. Cord cutting, ditching your steep monthly cable or satellite bill and instead watching video online is on the rise, according to a new report from Experian Marketing Services. In fact, some young adults may never even pay for cable TV in their lifetimes. The number of cord cutters, which Experian considers people with high-speed internet who've either never subscribed to or stopped subscribing to cable or satellite, has risen from 5.1 million homes to 7.6 million homes, or 44% in just 3 years. In 2013, 6.5% of households in the U.S. had cut the cord, Experian found, up from 4.5% in 2010. What's more interesting, though, is that numbers go way up for households that use Netflix or Hulu, the subscription services that stream movies and TV shows online. Nearly a fifth of Americans who use Netflix or Hulu don't subscribe to cable TV, and that number gets even higher if you look at a younger segment of the population. Almost a quarter of young adults between 18 and 34 who subscribe to Netflix or Hulu don't pay for TV, Experian found. And who can blame them? TV is pricey. The average cable TV bill, not including feeds, promotions, or taxes, has increased by a whopping 97% in the last 14 years, according to the media research firm SNL Kagan, which probably has nothing to do with Saturday Night Live. That bill could reach a whopping $200 a month by 2020, one study found. That could spell trouble for cable companies like Comcast and Charter and Time Warner down the line. The young millennials who are just getting started on their own may never pay for television, said John Fetto, a senior analyst at Experian Marketing Services. Pay TV is definitely declining, Fetto said, that the cable companies, which of course are often also the gatekeepers to the internet, will have to get more creative with their billing to make up for the revenue lost by people who are cutting the cord. So-called data caps, which limit the amount of data a person can download each month before they're charged overage fees, are already in place in more than 60% of homes in the U.S., according to GigOhm. We may also see more tiered pricing models, which would charge more to people who stream more, Fetto said. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is, are you a cord cutter? And the choices are, yep, haven't had TV for a while now. Not yet, but I'm seriously thinking about it. Flirting with the idea, but it's kind of scary. And no, I love television. So far, we have 33 people who have voted, and it's regularly even, except for yep, which is only 3 votes. The other 30 are fairly close. And of course, if you have more to say, there are 2 ways to do that. One is to check out the forums. If you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you will see a link to the forums and the forum of 26 April 14. Are you a cord cutter? Please leave your information there and join the lively discussions going on. And, of course, you can always give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. 1-5. Before we go any farther, let me say what a great job you guys did last week with Rob.
That was all Rob.
I was listening. I kind of nodded off for a little bit, but I was so sick.
So did we.
I was so, so very sick. Don't get the flu this year. I'm just giving you a little friendly word of warning. You can hear I'm still not entirely over it. I'm not contagious anymore, although there will be no kissing today.
Aww.
Yeah, I know. But if you get it, you didn't get it from me. But yeah, so I have not had that deep urge to cut the cord yet.
Every time I see my cable bill, I have that urge. But I'm afraid, because even while it's the big thing is you can't watch shows the day they air or the hour they air, so you have to get used to watching it later.
Right.
But we're already sort of used to that with DVRs. We hardly ever watch any shows live.
Right.
But
which means you spend all your time avoiding spoilers on the internet.
Yeah. Well, and that sort of has become part of the issue is that people are binge watching. So you go to Netflix and watch the entire season of Breaking Bad. So people already know you can't talk about stuff. Have you seen the episode where? No. Oh. Yeah.
Well, and
I do that all the time. Yeah.
There's the pot calling the kettle beige.
But yeah, so it's kind of scary to think about that fallback. Oh, it's on TV tonight. But the alternative with Amazon Prime and Netflix and Hulu for streaming, and then iTunes and some of the other places where you can buy shows too. Add all that up together, and that's usually less than the TV portion of your cable TV bill.
Right.
And you had mentioned that bills are likely to hit $200. That's just for basic stuff.
Right.
Already you can pay way more than that if you get all the premium channels.
Right.
And so that becomes sort of the catch-22, that if you want to watch Breaking Bad, you need regular cable, because that's AMC. If you want to watch Game of Thrones, you got to get HBO. If you want to watch, what is it, Orange is the New Black? Is that Showtime? So every one of the big pay channels has this premiere show that's really popular, and you end up subscribing to the whole stupid channel to get that one show.
And if you want to watch House of Cards or any of the other stuff that's coming out, you got to get Netflix. Amazon is working on their own sets of series. It's getting amazing out there. The number of really good shows that are available, but every one of them is on a different medium.
And where the content is coming from is getting interesting, too, that it used to be, with the three big TV channels, you could only buy so much content, but producers are making stuff all the time. And so that's where some of the higher cable channels, so like the USA Network would get get shows that the big three didn't want. And now we're seeing first run on USA, we're seeing first run on AMC. It's kind of funny, sometimes on Sci-Fi Channel, they're calling it a sci-fi original, first-run show, but it aired in Canada last year.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, okay, that's North America, I guess. And Orphan Black, showing on BBC America, ironically, is shot in Canada, but we're getting it on BBC America, so we're a little behind where it is in Canada.
And we don't get some great Canadian series like Little Mosque on the Prairie.
Yep.
Too bad.
That's fun. So there you need the antenna, so you can try to pick up something in Toronto or Niagara Falls. So it's got to be neat in Niagara Falls, either New York or Ontario. You can get all the stations from both sides.
And that brings us back to the days of my youth when I'd be the guy who'd go in the attic.
Yep. Rotate
stick my
the antenna.
Head out the window. How's it look? Turn it.
Yep.
Boop. What? Stop! Yeah. Oh, turn it back about an inch. Okay.
That was one of Steve Wozniak.
Yep.
That was one of Steve Wozniak's early. Why doesn't it have my thing here? Steve Woz's early pranks is he had a box that would scramble the TV signal, and so when he walked into the TV room at the college, he would scramble the signal, and he'd wait till someone would get up and touch the antenna and then start fiddling with it. And when they got into some crazy position, standing on a chair, left elbow in the air, he would turn it off and leave the room. So they thought they had to stay. So as soon as they sat back down again, he would jam it. So they'd get up and touch it again, and he'd unjam it. And it was fun.
Yeah. The MP3 stream is down. We know that. Thank you.
He's bringing it up right now.
Yeah, he's bringing it up even as we speak. It looks like it's coming online shortly.
And I'm trying to get the Ustream running. It doesn't see my second camera, which I'm annoyed at.
Yeah, but so the broadcast may be a little. Those of you listening on the podcast may be
off a little.
A little bit off today, but then most of you are if you're actually listening to us. We should probably go to the phones. We have poor Carl waiting all the way from Pottstown, PA, and we should probably talk to him. How are you, Carl?
Good. How are you today?
Peachy, thanks. Sorry about making you wait.
Oh, no problem. It was very interesting.
Oh, you're listening to the wrong channel. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm running a Windows 7 Pro machine. I'm running ESET NOD 32 antivirus. And just last night, I downloaded Windows Virtual PC and Windows XP mode. So now I could run a virtual machine and run this in Windows XP mode. First thing I noticed when I brought up Windows XP mode was that it doesn't have an antivirus. And
right.
Apparently, the ESET NOD 32 that I run on Windows 7 doesn't work in Windows XP mode.
Right.
So I have to download a separate antivirus. And just wondering, if it's a different brand antivirus, will it conflict with the NOD 32?
No, because what's happening there is they are in two different virtual machines. And unless you have set them up with, for example, a common file, a common folder, they never talk to each other. That's the whole idea behind a virtual machine. Many of the servers that you can buy a server on the internet, it's actually a virtual machine. There could be 200 other servers that are infected or locked up or crash or what. You'll never know it because it has nothing to do with your virtual machine.
And in fact, you probably can use the same NOD 32 in that virtual machine. Technically, the issue then becomes the license restriction. Is it licensed for two computers?
Right.
And is a virtual machine counted as a second computer? And that gets the license even trickier.
Right. But you can also load something like Avast or AVG into that XP virtual machine and get as protected as you're going to get. Let us remember that viruses only do a certain amount. And
antivirus.
Antiviruses, rather, only do a certain amount. And anti-malware in general only does a certain amount. And there are things, the reason they keep patching the operating system is because there are things that the various virus systems, antivirus systems, don't protect you against. So you still have to be very, very careful.
And one of the things you can do is in that XP virtual machine is just stay off the internet. Because internet and email are where most of the infections are coming from these days. So if you just have a program that needs XP but doesn't need internet access, you may be safe for a while. Safe,
right.
Safer than...
Safe-ish.
Yeah, safe-ish, yeah.
Okay, also, when I was setting up virtual XP mode, I did not turn on automatic updates because I figured XP is not being updated anymore anyway. So is that the correct thing to do?
It depends on what version of XP you got in that VM. If it's SP3 with all the patches in it, then you don't need any more patches. But if it wasn't already patched, then you need to run all the patches. But you can do that manually through Windows Update.
Okay. Yeah, it is Surface Pack 3, so it is completely updated.
Or as updated as it will ever get.
Yep.
Right. Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, We are Soundbite. And we have Andy from Greece, New York on the line. Welcome, Andy. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Real quick, just to follow up from our call 2 weeks ago, I did get my MD laptop fixed. I actually broke down and called or did a live chat with HP and their support area. The work group was not the problem. They actually restored the image off from the D drive. And the minute they did it, the problem connecting to the network went away. So I don't know, something when they built the unit didn't go in right, and that fixed it, and
yep,
we've been pretty happy ever since. I did find out that if you're running Time Warner for your email and you go to Win8, you have to go IMAP. You can't use POP3. It just won't download the mail, and when I called Time Warner, they said, oh, yeah, you have to go to a whole different server. And
when did Time Warner start doing IMAP? They have never done IMAP, as far as I know.
Well, it does now.
All right. Because that's been a huge problem with trying to sync your mail between your computer and your phone and your tablet, is you have to use IMAP for that, and Time Warner never did.
Well, they do with Win8, which if you loaded it up and it defaulted to the POP3 server setup, which it did, then you go to download your mail, and it won't give it to you.
So let's
see. My wife was very upset.
Well, that's actually good.
If it works with Windows 8, it should work with any OS.
Right. I mean, this is actually good, because it apparently forced Time Warner, at least, to start doing IMAP.
And you're using the Rochester server?
It works on 7.
They're probably using a really old POP.
I brought up a 7 computer within the last month, and it went right into the POP3 server, and it did just fine. So.
Right. But Windows 8 apparently wants IMAP.
Or it's the version of POP that Time Warner's using is too old, which it probably is.
But,
we used to joke that you know, POP is 30 years old and IMAP is 20 years old, and so they're using the older protocol.
Relatively speaking. Two quick questions.
Sure.
Is it possible, or do you know of anybody that would write drivers for older hardware? Specifically, I've got a couple of Logitech three-button TrackMan that I really like for ergonomic issues, and the new stuff doesn't have the layout or isn't configured the right way.
No, they would need the down and dirty hardware specs that are never released. I mean, they're part of the proprietary intellectual property of the company, and they're not going to release enough of that to do the drivers. You may find somebody who's reverse engineered them, but that's not an easy, simple, or cheap thing to do. So if somebody did it, they did it for love.
Maybe,
and put it out there.
Maybe look around SourceForge, because it may be somebody from Linux who did it because they have that thing and want it. That's how the Linux community works. If they want it to work, they write it themselves. And there may be a Windows version as well. There is a program for the Mac called USB Overdrive that is a generic USB driver that lets you program pretty much anything that plugs into USB. I don't know if there's a Mac equivalent or a Windows equivalent of that, but there may be.
Okay, and where what?
It's called USB Overdrive for Mac.
Okay, and what was the one you mentioned before that?
Well, SourceForge is a website for open source, mostly Linux, but often Windows and Mac software as well.
All right, well, we'll hunt around. The mouse, the trackball actually works. First and third buttons work. The wheel works. Does what it's supposed to. I just can't program the middle button to do an automatic double click, and after 10-plus years of using it, I'm kind of addicted to using that middle button for an automatic double click. I find myself hitting it and nothing happening. Last question. Pull the old XP computers off. They're going to go out to recycling. Hard drives in them. Is there an enclosure you can put an IDE drive into that will allow you to plug it into a USB port?
They're getting hard to find because most of the drives are SATA now, but there are a couple of companies that do.
You can get enclosures.
Right,
but
an IDE enclosure, not a SATA enclosure.
Yeah, you can go online and still find IDE enclosures that will, you plug it in and it's got the USB hookup for it.
Yeah, probably like Newegg or
one of those
Amazon.
Or Tiger. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just go on there. You're looking for an IDE enclosure and go from there.
Right. I use one.
Just rather than take a hammer to them, just in case I need to, go in and I forgot a file here or there, which I thought I had everything backed up, but
Yep.
You had to hook them back up to a monitor and keyboard and turn them back on to extract one file. And if I can get an enclosure to pop them into,
mm-hmm.
makes the process a lot less painful.
There was
yep, there's one I'm at excuse me. I'm at Newegg, and I search for IDE to USB enclosure, and there seem to be about 91 of them. Here's one for $17, $12, $32, $20, $9, $52.
I use a cable from Newer that's IDE and SATA, 2.5 and 3.5.
Yeah, I've got the same thing. You plug it in, and it'll hook up to both IDE drives, the new SATA, and the 3.5-inch drives.
Yep, and 2.5-inch IDE laptop drives.
Yeah, I got that.
Yep.
And it's great. I forget the name of the company.
Newer Technology is the one that I bought. It's probably the same thing from other companies.
Yeah, but it's great. You just plug it in, and then they give you the cable, and you can plug it into your laptop or your hard drive, and it boots it up like a secondary drive, and you can access whatever you want off of it. Yep.
And it's used a lot in
talking with you, and thank you very much.
Well, yeah, and again, it depends on how old the drive is, whether you want to put that much money into it.
Yeah.
Whereas having this device, it's universal.
Right. And it's just loose cable, so we in the service industry use it all the time to plug in somebody's hard drive.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've got two hard drives, and you know, it's just a fail-safe, so I'm not going to invest a lot of money in it. But on the other hand, once the boxes are gone to the recycling,
yep.
and I keep the hard drive, it allows me to be able to tap into it if the need should arise.
Well, like I said, there were $20, $10, $50, $60. So pick the one you like.
Yeah, we'll look at it and see what's going to cause the least amount of pain for the budget and give us the functionality we need.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Have fun.
It's always interesting trying to adapt old stuff to new technology. And every now and then we have a customer call and they'll have a SCSI hard drive they want to connect or an old Jazz drive they want to connect. I think one of my favorite was the Bernoulli box. A Bernoulli box with a SCSI interface.
Nice.
There's a 30-year-old thing.
I still have a Bernoulli disc.
Yeah.
Which is the size of your chest.
Yeah, that they were the early ones were 12-inch. Yeah. Yep.
But I don't have any way to actually play it.
That was always the problem with the removable drive cartridges, the Zip and the Jazz and the SideQuest Bernoulli is, you know, you got a driver and you got the discs, and if you lose one or the other, then you're out of luck.
I was actually moving an old desktop box, which I, for some reason, haven't thrown out. I think it's because I still haven't taken the hard drives out of them, and I'm in Andy's position there. And I noticed it had a Jazz drive in it.
Wow.
And I thought, I don't think I have any Jazz discs. All right, back to the phone.
Keep it around, just in case. Sell it on eBay for...
Keep the drive around anyway.
Yeah, exactly. You never know.
Probably get some money out of it.
Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm well. I called last week, and I talked to the guys. I was trying to install Ubuntu on an older XP laptop, and I had burned the ISO to a disk, and I got the system to boot off the disk, and I went to install it, and it did all its pre-prep and got all the check marks for what it was looking for, and then it said preparing to install, and that's as far as it went. It stayed there, and it stalled there a better part of 45 minutes, never moved, and I was wondering if you have a clue.
That has happened to me once or twice when I did a bad download.
Okay.
I get a certain amount of the way through the process, and it's random, and then it just dies. And if I burn another DVD or CD, I suppose in this case you're probably using a DVD.
I used a DVD.
It works. What I've found was my home connection for a while was very flaky. And when I went and downloaded the ISO at work and then burned it at home, but downloaded it at work, it came across fine.
Okay.
And theoretically, the download is supposed to catch those errors and re-download that package.
Yeah, theoretically, yeah.
Okay. So try and re-download it.
Now, how much, but you said it did all its checking, so it knows that it has enough RAM and there was and the hard drive. First thing you probably want to do is check the drive for errors.
Okay.
And then on most Ubuntu downloads, there's a program called MemCheck.
Okay.
And let that run for 24 hours. And it will stress test your RAM.
Okay.
So do both of those before, you know, you go another step farther. You may find that there's your issue.
Okay.
Good luck.
Good.
Let us know how that works out.
I will. Oh, by the way, for the gentleman that was looking for the hard drive enclosure.
Yeah.
I've seen on Tiger Direct quite a few times they have a dock for like $20, and you can put either or drive in, not have to mount it in a box at all.
Yeah, we used a few of those too.
Put it in a dock.
Nice.
Yeah. An IDE dock on it and a SATA dock on it.
Oh, right, and you plug them in just like they were
like
an iPod
toaster,
or something.
Right, and it's a step above loose cables.
Right,
it's,
right.
It's
right.
A little cleaner.
Yeah, and it was only like $20, so.
Yeah, yeah.
That was kind of
good
neat.
Thought.
So, well, thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Mark.
I've seen a couple of them that will have multiple slots in them, so you can have a couple of drives in at once. It's, and some people, we see a lot of customers using that as their backup drive. So you have one dock and raw hard drives, because raw hard drives are cheaper. You stick it in there, do your backup, and then take the drive out and put it in your fire safe and stick the next drive in and
right.
back it up.
Right.
So it's cheaper than buying individual drives, because you don't need to pay for the enclosure and power supply each time, just the raw drive.
All right, back to the phones. Except for Pottstown, PA, all our people have been in Greece, New York today. It's Steve. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, guys. I'm glad you're feeling better, Nick.
Thank you.
I called last week. I'm the gentleman who couldn't get to the internet via his computer.
Yeah?
I couldn't get to website. I can get to the internet, the Dropbox updates, my virus updates, but I cannot go to the internet on my desktop. If I am not logged into the desktop, I can get to the any place I want on my laptop via my network. If I've booted the desktop, I can't get to, doesn't matter what I'm using. I've got some more information from you from last week. I reran my virus, did my Tango dance, found nothing new. But someone pointed me to the Internet Protocol version.
Yeah.
And I was on use the following DNS server addresses versus obtain an IP address automatically.
Right.
So I fixed that. Someone else pointed me to, and I did spend half an hour with Roadrunner. They were very helpful. I know they weren't able to fix it. What I found is when I run ipconfig, the connection-specific DNS suffix is supposed to have roadrunner.rr.com in there.
Right.
And it's blank. And it's always blank. And so I'm really close to formatting and starting from scratch. This has been going on for over 3 weeks.
Let me suggest you try this.
Okay.
First, have you danced the Security Tango?
Yes.
Okay. The second thing.
Safe mode.
Good. And the second thing you want to try is adding in your own DNS servers.
They did it. They gave me one to log in to 192.168.1.1.
Yeah, that's not going to be it.
Okay.
The two you want to use are the Google DNS servers. They are 8.8.8.8.
That's one we already tried, yes. Go on.
And 8.8.4.4.
Yeah, we've actually tried both of those also.
And you still can't get anywhere.
As I said, I can't go to any website.
Right.
But I'm attached to the internet. They basically have determined there's nothing wrong with my router. There's nothing wrong with the... I mean, basically, when I called them, I was straight from the router to the desktop wasn't going through the Wi-Fi at all.
There's something wrong with your routing tables, and I can't
delete and re-add the network adapter. Maybe.
Well, if you delete,
flush the DNS cache. What operating system are you on?
I flush the cache.
Not the web cache, the DNS cache.
Listen, stay on the line. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Steve from Greece, and all of you. It is 41 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is...
Hi, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 47 minutes after the hour, we still have Steve from Greece, New York, on the line. You still there, Steve?
I am here.
All right. Our Steve has found something that may help.
Yeah, one of the things is the DNS cache, which is separate from the web cache, where your computer remembers the names and addresses of pages you've been to, which is theoretically a little faster than looking it up again. If you flush the DNS cache, then it forces it to look up the address from the new DNS server. And so we posted a link on how to flush the DNS cache on all OSs. So there's different procedures for Windows, Linux, and Mac.
You pull the little handle on the left-hand side.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to have to...
So it's basically in a command line as administrator. It's /ipconfig/flushDNS.
Okay, it's ipconfig...
/flushDNS, but you have to be running as administrator. Run the command line as administrator.
This is what I wish I had a toilet sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that can, if the problem is the DNS lookup not working. In fact, at a command line, you can do what's the command to look up? Well, even ping. You know, ping google.com and see if it can look up the actual IP address. That will tell you if it's a DNS issue or if it's a connection issue.
Okay, so, all right.
So what happens when you type an address like google.com is your DNS has to look up the actual computer internet protocol address, the four-digit sequences. And so if your computer can't find that name, and that's what the DNS server does, is it looks up what that number is so your computer can go to the other computer. It's like the internet phone book. And to help speed things up, your computer will remember the addresses of places it's been to. And if a server changes their address, which servers do from time to time, you have to look up the new address. There's also an attack called the DNS cache poisoning attack. So you think you're going to PayPal, and it's a fake PayPal. And so that's one thing you want to make sure you clear your DNS cache when you're having trouble getting to websites.
The other thing you might want to try, just to make sure that the problem is actually in your DNS cache, is to go to a site like Google by number, not by name.
Yeah, we tried that also, and it didn't work.
So you went to 74.125.226.240 and did not get to Google.com?
I don't think it was Google. That wasn't the one she gave me, but it was. We tried putting in addresses. I think it was Bing we used, or we used the Roadrunner one. I don't believe the 74, whatever one you just...
Right. So the issue may well be that you got caught by something, some sort of Trojan virus business thing that screwed up. First, see if you can go to a command prompt and ping one of those numbers.
Right.
Even 8.8.8.8. You should be able to ping that and get back a response. If you can't go to 8.8.8.8, but if you were to then ping google.com, see what happens. If you can go there, the problem from the command line, right?
Right.
If you can go there, then the problem is in your browser.
It happens on all my browsers, all three browsers.
Then it'll probably happen in the thing, which means the problem is somewhere in your IP stack, and maybe clearing out the DNS cache will fix that.
At what
but
OS,
I would start there.
Yeah. What OS are you running?
Windows 7.
What was that IP fix program? That was XP, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, there was a known issue with the IP stack on XP, and I remember Dave was always talking about that. Run that fix IP stack command.
Yeah, it's still out there. That utility's still out there. If you go to
remember the name of it.
IP fix.
Is it?
Yeah, and if you go to like majorgeeks.com, you can probably find it there.
Okay. But I think that was just for XP.
Yeah. It was.
Yeah. I would try flushing the DNS cache first. Start there, let us know what happens.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, thanks. And Steve did post the link to that, so
yeah.
You should be able to follow and make sure you're following the ones for Windows 7.
Yeah, that was an issue that we had on the Mac. Was it a year ago, 2 years ago? There was a DNS spoofing Trojan that came out, and we all had to learn how to flush our DNS cache and had to look up what your DNS settings were. And it was one of those really low level things, and you know, pretty sneaky. You type PayPal.com. And your computer takes you to a fake PayPal.com, even though you're spelling it right, because the phone book is wrong and it's going to the wrong address.
Right, right, right.
And I do want to mention for that previous caller with the Time Roadrunner Mail and IMAP, I was able to get my Roadrunner Mail set up for IMAP, but I had to use mail.twc.com as the server address. So the Roadrunner, rochester.rr.com, does not have IMAP, but Time Warner has IMAP. So you can do IMAP with Time Warner, and I posted a link to those server addresses. So you just have to make a new email setup in your mail program, and then you can use IMAP with your Roadrunner mail. So your mail will synchronize between your computer, your tablet, and your phone.
Right, right, right. Okay, back to the phones. It's our friend Scott from Buffalo, New York. Hello, Scott. How are you?
I am happy.
Oh, I love it when you're happy.
I'm happy because Dave left me on hold for 34 minutes. And the reason why I'm happy is because your stream is out. And I can't get the program, so I was able to hear the program while I was on hold.
The stream is back up, by the way.
Is it back up now?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We had an issue with...
the whole internet was down.
The whole internet was down, not just for us, but for... pretty much all of BOCES. So
mm-hmm. It was completely down.
It was completely down everywhere. So
Rob did his magic and he got things restarted. He even logged in. He had me restart the machine here. I've been chatting back and forth with him, but everything seems to be copacetic. Just doesn't know.
Well, the only reason I was calling is because it was down. And it's up. I don't have any reason to call. Thank you.
You are a smart, clever man, sir. I will say that. Thank you.
Right.
So yeah, you get on hold and you can listen to the call. We do have the radio stream. We have the Ustream video stream, which is working, and we have the Google Hangout stream, which is now working. But they all rely on the internet, and it's frustrating when the internet goes down and you realize how much you rely on the internet.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, and we've been talking about that. One of the things that people are always saying to me, because I tend to carry my Chromebook everywhere, people are always saying, yeah, but you have to be connected to the internet to do things. Well, no, you actually do not have to be connected to the internet. But even so, how much stuff do you do that you're not connected to the internet for anymore? I don't care what you're on. The first thing you do when you go somewhere is look for a Wi-Fi connection.
Yeah, you want to check your mail. You want to look at web pages.
Right. So that's a specious argument.
We talk about, you know, word processing. Nobody does word processing anymore. They type in their email, and you got to be on the internet.
Right. All right. Our next caller is Tommy from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tommy. What's up?
Hello.
Hello. How are you? What can we do for you, Tommy?
Oh, hi. I wanted to ask you a question. I bought a new printer, but it doesn't want to be set as a default printer. It keeps saying, check printer name and make sure the printer is connected to the network. I don't understand that.
So something didn't happen right when you set it up. So is it a USB printer or is it a wireless printer?
I have it wireless.
So you have some printers have to be connected USB first to tell it to use wireless. Some printers you set up on wireless.
Right, that's what I did. I connected the USB port, set it up, and then I told it wireless.
And then you have to unplug the USB connection from the printer.
Right, that's what I did.
All right, when you were on it, connected via USB and told it to do wireless, did it make a connection?
Yes, I see a wireless symbol on the screen.
All right, does your wireless router require a login? A username or a password or anything?
No.
Is there a status or a connection report you can print from the printer? Because sometimes that will tell you.
It had an error report. It had like 0x00000709.
That doesn't sound right. So there should
keep saying error.
Yeah, there should be a section called wireless that should have the name of your wireless network and the wireless security. Do you have a password on your Wi-Fi?
Password on my Wi-Fi?
Yeah. So
no.
Okay.
Oh, you mean on my internet?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Did you put that password into the printer?
No, I didn't.
That's why. There's your issue right there.
Well, then what do I have to do? Go into the setup again?
Yes, you have to go back into the setup and connect it to the Wi-Fi putting in the correct name of the wireless router and the password so you can get to the internet.
Oh, all right. So I have to...
Yeah.
Have to reinstall it then?
Well, you'll have to plug it back into USB and do it that way.
And run the setup program again.
Yeah.
All right.
If the printer has a screen on it, then you may be able to do it right on the printer itself. But sometimes it's easier on the computer.
All right, I'll do it.
All right, thanks. All right, you've wasted an entire hour of your life watching this show, but for those of you who are slow learners, you'll have the chance to do it again.
How do they watch it?
Listening to this show, if they're on the stream, they're watching. If they're on the YouTube channel, they're watching it. So, ha, 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 ha. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Some weeks, it seems longer than others. We are Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. On Computer Show, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. And on the line, we have Greg from Webster, New York. Welcome, Greg. What's up?
Hey, a Nigerian prince from Microsoft called my girlfriend.
And, nice.
Took over her computer, and anyways, I'm wondering who I should report that to.
The Internet Reporting Council, or mm-hmm. IRC, IRC, just get on any IRC channel, and there's programs that will let you get on IRC, get on any Internet IRC channel, and report that, and let us know what they say to you.
Okay.
Yeah, they'll probably say, yeah, we know of it. That's all true.
The only place on the Internet where people are less polite than they are in YouTube comments is IRC channels. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the unfortunate part about it is there's not a heck of a lot they can do about it.
Well, I didn't think but...
You know, I mean, it's like one hand clapping. That's the way I've phrased it for years. You know, we can try to put all kinds of barriers up and everything else, and these idiots with no lives find ways around it.
Yep.
And it's a constant battle.
There is a form that the U.S. Department of Justice has where you can report things like this, but it's almost worthless because they hide the bad guys hide themselves so fast. But it you know it's not a bad idea to fill it out.
Well, I figure it's probably an underreported problem because, like you say, they can disappear so quickly.
Yep, and the addresses are always faked. I get you know at least two or three calls a week from people saying that you know my computer has been hacked because people are getting mail I didn't send. No, it wasn't your computer. They just happened to pick your name and your bad luck.
Yeah.
And so there's nothing you can do about it because it's not your computer doing it.
Yeah, to be serious, you can report it, but I'll almost guarantee they won't be able to do anything about it.
Okay.
There are better laws for when people call you on the phone.
Well, they did call on the phone.
If you have an actual phone number that they called from.
I'm sure she has caller ID, so I was going to look at that.
Yeah, if you have a number they called from, now you can get the Federal Communications Commission involved, and so far they're still on our side for at least that little bit of thing. So you can try that, but if it's on the internet, if it's just an email address or whatever, I'll guarantee that's all long gone.
And relinquish control of the computer.
Yeah, they're really sneaky, and they talk the talk, and they're really convincing.
Right.
What we think it is it's actual telephone support people, maybe in their off hours. So you know, all day long, you know, they're you know answering calls for Microsoft, and then at night they make their own phone calls. And make their own money. And a lot of them they have such real sounding names, you know, this is Windows Help or Microsoft Help. You know, they never actually say they're actually from Microsoft. They're very from the ones I've seen are very tricky about skirting the fraud laws. If they say they're Windows Help and they offer to take control of your computer, they technically didn't do anything illegal. They tricked you, but that's not necessarily illegal. And then
but you granted them access.
Right, because you granted them access. And then they charge you $300 for this call. That's a subscription to their service. So you can call them up and get any question you want answered during that subscription time. So it's very tricky to prosecute because they're skirting the laws.
So they removed AVG antivirus and Super Anti spyware.
Yeah,
so they could put their own in. Yeah,
Clean Sweep, I think, in another program.
Yeah, what I might suggest is either taking it to a reputable vendor or dancing the security tango yourself.
Yeah, I was going to try the security tango first, and then
Because I just had one this past week again, an XP box that got hacked, and you know it's. The whole trouble, folks, you know, a lot of folks are still running the old XP and they want miracles to happen.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. I mean, the minute you get on there, they're getting hit faster than the folks with Windows 7.
Yeah.
A lot faster. And the gentleman was saying, you know, well, I just had it fixed. I says, well, you know what? It's not meant to be. It's that machine should be off the internet. Just use it for other stuff and stay away because...
Yeah, I just bought her this computer for Christmas. So
okay.
And the other problem that we see is that these disreputable companies are using real software, like log me in and go to my PC.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll leave it installed and leave it running so they can watch what you do. And we've had customers who've had their credit cards compromised because they were sitting there watching you go to Amazon and buy something. So then they've got your credentials now.
Right.
So you have to, you know, sort of scour your computer for the log me in. It could be log me in rescue, log me in remote. You know, log me in company has several products legitimately used by tech support for remote access. And so the bad guys are using it to trick people in because it's a name that's known.
Yep.
Soundbites, please hold.
Although it's a little better now that log me in doesn't have a free version.
Nice.
So they canceled their free version, so you have to pay for it. But it's still one
that
of those known
stinks.
Programs. Yeah. I've started using TeamViewer now, which isn't
it's still free for
yeah,
now.
Still
anyway.
Still free for now. Yeah.
Okay. You know, well, NXP thank is you very much.
Sure.
All right,
thank you. NXP, of course, is 13 years old. You know, so I've got underwear newer than that. So.
I should hope so.
It's too old.
Yeah.
You know?
But it works. And I understand
that's the problem.
People don't want to change it because it works.
But what surprises me is if you have a 13-year-old car, you will expect to put more repair money into it, and you will realize at some point it may be time for a new car.
Yeah. And like I said, I was going back.
But people are angry about XP.
And I've got this one gentleman, you know, well, I tried to do this and this, and I'm getting errors. Well, yeah, you know what? Short of wiping the machine out and redoing it, and it's not going to happen, you know, it's not going to fix it. It's still going to come back to bite you in the butt.
Yep.
You got to just forget it, stay off the internet with it, use it for what you wanted to do offline, and be happy with that. But no, he's, you know, they've been calling, and it's like, well, it's not doing. What do you want me to do?
Yep.
It's clean as much as it can to, you know, run safely. Don't say that you're going, oh, just go back on the internet for a minute just to check this or that. No, it's not going to work. You're going to get hit again.
Right.
It's
and they don't understand. And they also don't understand that an antivirus program and an anti-malware program do not and cannot patch the operating system.
Right, and it can't catch all the stuff.
And it can't catch all of that stuff. So there will be new exploits that come out, and they can hit you before you get an update to your antivirus, assuming your antivirus can even handle that. Antiviruses handle viruses. That's all they handle. They don't handle operating systems.
And believe it or not, viruses are on the decline.
Yeah, they are.
Viruses are on the decline.
Well,
big time.
We're
going to
see some new XP ones coming out.
Yeah, but the thing of it is, though, is they'd rather do the spyware and malware.
Right. They want to steal your money.
Where they can steal stuff.
Yep.
They make money on that. The virus, like I say, I haven't seen a good virus in a long time.
There are still some good ones out there that take over your machine in the background so that they can run attacks on other machines and things like that. But that's all.
Yeah, that and like you say, that's so rare. It's hard to find those.
But there's a lot of old ones that are still running around. You know, Code Red and Ninja and Conflicker. You know, they're still out there bouncing
around.
They're
still out there.
Yeah.
There's no denying that. But what I'm saying, though, is the biggest thing is the malware and spyware. They'd rather get into your machine, take it over, than con you into thinking, oh, with their product, they can get it off your machine for $75 or even $29, and you pay it, and then you're hosed because this machine is still infected.
Yeah. But that's also less of a thing for them than to use your machine as part of a massive brood attack on a bank or something.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And the old browsers, too, that keep track, that are a problem, that Microsoft patches holes in the newer browsers. They announced this week that Internet Explorer 6 usage is down to under 5%.
Thank heaven.
That's, 12, 13 years old, too. But you can't run IE 9 or 10. And I think you can run 9 on XP. And so you can't run the newer patched browsers on the older operating systems. We see that same thing on the Mac world. You can't run the latest browser on an older OS. So you're sort of forced to upgrade your OS. Okay. Fortunately, on Apple's point, the upgrade prices are relatively inexpensive for the OS, but there's that cascading, you know, upgrade. You may need to upgrade your RAM. You may need to put a bigger hard drive in. You may need to upgrade some other software you're using
that's
also
for.
Old. Yeah.
Right.
So it's very complicated for people sometimes to upgrade.
Back to the phones. Our next caller is Gerd from Victor, New York. Welcome, Gerd. What's up?
Hey, gentlemen. I'm a paid member and for years now. I have a Windows XP Professional HP Compact DX2200 Micro Tower.
Wow.
It's 5-6 years old. Now, the question is, how do I clean out what's in there and put something else on, like Ubuntu, or what are your suggestions, and is there any literature out there that can be used to, you know, still use the tower, but obviously get off XP?
Right. There are two things. Well, I would suggest that a machine as old as that, how much RAM does it have, do you know?
No, I don't.
Okay. One of the things you should do is check out the Lugor user group, the Linux user group of Rochester, Lugor, L-U-G-O-R. Their website is at lugor.org. They often have install parties where they will help you install a version of Linux of whatever flavor you like on top of, instead of your operating system. But if you want to do it yourself, what you do is you go to Ubuntu.com and download a version of Ubuntu. There's Ubuntu that runs GNOME. There's Ubuntu that runs XFCE. There's a version that runs LFXE.
Different flavors
of the front end of Linux. So you can make it look like a Mac, or you can make it look like Windows, or you can make it look like nothing you've ever seen before, depending on which one of these you get. And you can always change them around. It's actually very cool. The front end is completely separate from the back end, so you can run any one you like. But let's say you just want to download plain Ubuntu. You go to their website, you download it, and you burn a CD. Then you boot that CD on the machine you want to put Linux on, and you follow the bouncing prompts. One of the things it will ask you is, do you want to take over the whole hard drive? You say yes, and it wipes out Windows for you.
It will.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And then I don't have to worry about... Now, can I still get, like, emails and stuff on these?
Absolutely. I've been running nothing but Ubuntu for a decade now, and I get all my email, and I browse the web, and I do everything that anybody else does. On Windows, I do it on Linux. There's no magic to any operating system. They all essentially do all the same things. They just do them all a little differently.
Okay. All right. I don't know. Can something be put on your website to do this stuff?
Well, we don't... We're not in the business of
upgrading to Ubuntu.
Yeah, I mean, we lead people to things.
Gotcha.
But we don't, we just answer people's computer questions. We don't support Ubuntu or anything like that. But if you wanted your desktop version of Ubuntu, let's say,
right,
to put on your computer, you go to Ubuntu.com. And across the top, there's cloud and server and desktop and phone and tablet and blah, blah, blah. You would pick desktop, and then you can look at the overview and the features or whatever. And down at the end is download, and you select desktop from that, and it will tell you here's where you download it,
and
a little bit about how to burn a DVD on Windows or on OS X.
There is a choice before you download as to which version you want, the 32-bit or 64-bit. If your machine has less than 2 gigs of RAM, you want to pick that 32-bit option. And then it tells you step by step how to burn it to a DVD or a USB stick, which is faster, for installing on your computer.
And
Ubuntu has a lot of really great forums. So down at the bottom, there's installation guides,
right,
and then there's the Helping Hands forums where you can also post questions too.
Okie doke. All right, we're going to have to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Bob from Rochester, New York on the line. Welcome, Bob. What's up?
Hi, Nick. About XP again. I, I took my old XP system out of service, and I'm now using a Windows 7 system for my production work. But the XP system is still hooked up to the network. There are a few old programs that I can't get a Windows 7 version for, so I've found it difficult to make the clean break. Question is, can I separate the old XP machine from the internet yet stay on my network for file transferring within the house?
You need a policy. Is it XP Pro by any chance?
It could be. Probably is.
Yes-ish.
It's hard.
It depends on your router. You can certainly set up a policy in your router that says let this machine talk to all the other machines, but not go on the internet.
Okay.
However, I not knowing your router, not knowing your setup, I can't tell you how to do that. But it is doable if you have the right router.
Okay. Well, I've got an ordinary Linksys router that it's modern router. I didn't realize that that's where I wanted to focus my attention.
Well, it can be done in the OS itself if the XP Pro that has the policy manager in it, which lets you set a policy for IP traffic. So that's tricky.
Right.
But the routers can often do it too.
Yeah. I do fiddle in my router with the IP addresses so they can serve webcams and so on.
Right.
So I know my way around there, but I never stumbled upon this.
Not necessarily every router will allow you to do that.
Yeah.
So Steve is right. If you have XP Pro and you can use the policy manager.
I just found a simple solution. Remove the DNS from your IP setting in your computer.
Okay.
So if there's no DNS, it can't look up a name, and it can't get to the internet.
And if it won't let you remove it, put in a bogus address.
Yeah. How would you remove it?
In the IP settings preference, there's a way to specify DNS. Specific. Put in 0000.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Or 127.0.0.1.
It'll ask you for the IP addresses and then the DNS, and you just put in the 0000.
If someone failed to do this and their XP system on the network was attacked, what danger does that pose to other systems on the network?
Depends.
Once something's in your machines inside your network, depending on what it is, it can attack other machines on the network over and over and over again, and eventually it will slip through. Brute force attack like that. Nothing is perfect. It may get in.
Yeah, because you don't know what could or could not get in. Open. You've opened up Pandora's box.
All right.
The reality is, Bob, I got to be honest with you. Anybody out there listening, please pay attention to this. Running XP now is a lot like lighting the fuse on a stick of dynamite and saying, well, it isn't a problem yet.
Yeah, you'd be better off disconnecting that machine from the internet completely.
Mm-hmm.
And from your LAN completely, so that it can't, nothing can get into it and get out to your other machines from it.
All right, I can do that.
And
the system in a pristine state from before when I migrated my data over to my new production machine in case I made a mistake. I don't want to. I didn't want to.
Always a good idea.
But it's still got some life in it, some hardware life, and I just didn't want to just stick it in the attic.
No, and I get that, and that's why a lot of people are starting to look at Ubuntu or any other version of Linux in order to keep older machines alive. If you really want to be able to use data on it, you want to be able to move those data, unconnected from the internet completely and move those data back and forth using a USB disk or a CD or whatever.
Yeah, I should be able to install Windows 7 over the existing XP.
Not always. Sometimes it has to install, what do they call it? It's not clean install. There's an upgrade install, and then there's a new install.
Yeah. Yeah, I generally only do new installs.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, well, I'll figure it out. In the meantime, I'll unplug it. You scared me good.
Good.
Okay, thanks for helping me.
Yep. Thanks, Bob.
And we understand that sometimes there still are those old programs that you can't upgrade or they're too expensive to upgrade. So keep that old machine, just unplug it from the network. You know? If you need to print, put a USB printer on it. Don't put a network printer on it.
I had a discussion with a fellow this week who really wanted to turn it into an argument that XP was still fine. And I just finally told him, look, I don't really care what you think. You're wrong, and that's the end of it. Yeah. It's not fine anymore.
For various definitions of fine.
Well, right. For certain select values of fine, it's okay.
But if it's fine that it can be exploited and broken into easily, then I suppose
then
that's
fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the reality is it's a ticking time bomb. It's like lighting the fuse and saying nothing happened yet.
Yep.
It's like leaving your front door wide open and saying nothing happened yet. Yeah, maybe nobody's going to come in your front door, but how do you know that?
Yep.
Are you really willing to take that chance with your home and your family? Well, and you clearly are willing to take that chance with your computer. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's up?
Well, I wanted to tune into your show right at noon, and I clicked on the link that I've been using for God knows how long, and I came up with a page from a company called No IP.
Yeah.
Said that something has expired here.
Now, what happened was that the internet was down.
Right.
And the stream was part of that, and it's back up now. We've got just tens and tens and tens of people. What is it, 65 right now are listening? Found the stream after it came back up, so they're all listening fine.
Right, but every time I click on that link, I keep getting the same page. I'm not getting back to the original.
Well, let me suggest that you go to...
Clear your cache.
You clear your cache, or you go to jazz901.org and click on Listen Live.
Clear the internet cache?
Clear your browser cache.
Browser cache, okay. I'll give that a try.
Yeah, give it a shot. Let us know.
All right, thanks.
Thanks.
Let me see.
We see that...
It's working from inside the studio, so
it should be working from outside. Well, it's clearly working from outside, because 65 people refound it after it came back on. And yes, that's significantly lower than it normally is, but 65 people found us, so... right now we're having that issue, and it did come back up just in time to start the show. So
I've got 6 people on the video stream.
I was joking that rather than looking stuff up on Google, we were actually going to have to know things.
Yeah. Fortunately, we've got 100 years of computer experience between us.
There are days when I think I've got 100 years of computer experience.
Easily, just probably me 75. I'm older than dirt. I invented dirt.
I know it. He still he chopped down the tree that said Adam loves Eve.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's up?
About 6 months ago, I tried to download Ubuntu to a CD. I mean, I actually downloaded and burned the CD, but I could not figure out how to make the CD bootable. I have Windows 7, and I have whatever minimal CD burning stuff that they give you when you get Windows 7, but I could not find any way to make... can you run that whole thing by me as to how I know I've got a bootable CD?
All right, here's the deal. When you download Ubuntu onto your computer... What you download is something called an ISO.
Okay.
And that is not a bootable, usable CD. It is the thing from which you make a bootable, usable CD.
Okay.
So you need a program that understands what an ISO is so that when you burn it to CD, it's not like burning a file to a CD. It actually takes that ISO, opens it up, pulls the pieces out of them, makes those pieces into a bootable CD, and burns that to the CD.
Okay.
And there are a dozen programs that do that.
I'm trying to
help
see.
Help me out.
I'm, well.
Can I,
well, you
I
do,
keep,
like, you
I keep
you
pushing the button, right, yes.
Something just to do that?
Pardon?
Could I download something free from the internet? That's what
I'm thinking of.
In Windows 7 and 8, there's a built-in program called Windows Disk Image Burner. So you're burning an image of a disk. You're not burning a disk. It's a subtle difference, but that's the key. So on the Ubuntu website, they have instructions on how to download and burn that ISO image to the disk.
Right, and are you using Windows 7?
I do have Windows 7, but so say, just for discussion's sake, that doesn't work, my Windows image burning thing. Can I find something else, a free program on the internet, just in case?
The Ubuntu website points to one called Infra Recorder. infrarecorder.org.
Okay, could you put that as a link on your thing?
Sure, yep. Oh, and that's also under the Ubuntu link I already posted. There's an installation instruction and how to burn an image.
Oh, great. Okay, that's all I need to know.
All right.
Thank you.
I'm going to try it on my Mac. What I'm a little confused about is when I go to this download bit, there's 64-bit Mac, but it says AMD 64. The Mac's using Intel 64, so is that Mac as in Macintosh?
No, the thing is, because back in the day, the only 64-bit processors were from AMD.
Mm-hmm.
They originally used AMD 64 as mm-hmm. their designation.
Yep.
Then there was a point where AMD 64 and Intel 64 had slightly different instruction sets.
Just enough.
Right. Because
just enough. Now they don't. Now they're identical. So, but they're still using the designation AMD 64 just because it's inertia.
So I should use the one that says Mac, AMD, even though I've got Intel.
Right,
right. The big thing there when Nick was saying...
Why should it make sense?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Between AMD and Intel at the time was that AMD's claim to fame was is they did, and it's a big deal, per cycle, they did one more instruction per cycle than the Intel. So they were considered faster.
Right.
And a lot of folks think, one instruction? Well, yeah, per cycle. And a cycle is a fraction of a second.
Yeah, we talk about computers now are doing 2 gigahertz, 2 billion cycles per second.
So if you can do one extra instruction per cycle, you're doing 2 billion extra instructions per second.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a decent number of cycles.
And so that was their claim to fame. You know, right. Doing that.
Right.
Now, can I use VirtualBox to install a VM of Ubuntu in my Mac OS?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah, why not?
64 URL not found. So I can't download 14.0.4 for Mac ISO.
Really?
So it said not found on server.
I don't know what that's all about.
I'm going to do straight 64-bit and see what happens.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try this. Because I got Windows 7 and Windows 8 in VMs. Yeah, let's try Ubuntu, too.
You should be able to do it with no issues. I had 2 or 3 different versions of Ubuntu, of Linux, running on virtual machines on my Linux box, actually. You do need a lot. If you're going to run it as a virtual machine, you need a lot of RAM. Because you're going to want a minimum of 2 gigs of RAM for your own system, plus a minimum of 2 gigs of RAM for each of your VMs.
Yep.
So if you've got 8 gig, you can run a couple or 3 VMs.
I did that at the CIDR meeting when we were talking about virtualization. You know, I've got 8 gigs in this machine, and I launched the Windows 7 VM. Oh, let's launch the Windows 8 VM too. That was a little slow.
Yeah.
One VM at a time.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. For no discernible reason, you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites. Right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 46 minutes after the hour, we have Vic, who says he's calling from Dayton, Ohio, but is probably in a call center somewhere in New Delhi. Welcome, Vic. What's your question?
Ah, my friend, what can I sell you? Anyhow, no, I'm really in Dayton, Ohio. But I've been listening to a lot of the people that call in with their problems with XP and running it on the Internet, and there are literally safe ways of doing it, and of course you know about virtual machines and things of that nature. But this is more to the point of, I think that the last, or somewhat, maybe two callers ago, he had his XP machine on his home network, and he's not about to reinstall or do anything else or build a virtual or a virtual machine.
Right.
But you can put a virtual machine over XP, and there are many programs that do that. In other words, you start a virtual environment. One of the programs is, ToolWiz. Time Freeze by ToolWiz. And this will put a virtual cloak over your machine, and you can browse the Internet and do whatever you want. And if you like the changes, you can keep them or delete them. That's all there is to it. Now, I wouldn't recommend this, you know, overall, but for people like that, the caller who's on his own home network and has a valuable program that only runs in XP, and, you know, that's just an ideal way of doing it.
Yeah, so it's a VM for the Internet rather than a VM from the Internet.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
And, thank you.
You know, it's there are a lot of programs like this. I have many machines. I use multiple boot Linux, and I have XP, and I use that program. There's one of many. But it will cloak your machine, and even if you lose power, its default state is, I'm going to erase all the changes.
Nice.
Windows Server, was it? There's a mode in there like that.
Yeah,
every time you log into Windows, and the Mac has that, their guest mode. When you log off, everything in that user account is deleted, and it basically creates a fresh user every time you log in.
Yeah, but in those cases, they're not virtual. They count.
Them. Yeah,
right.
This is a virtual environment, and you can look it up. And I would recommend, and there are other programs, I just can't think of them offhand. I just said, I'll call and tell you. But
well, that's a great, and you can leave those in our forums if you remember them later.
You can do that.
Okay, thanks.
It's your forums, you do that. But there are many programs like this. I just happen to use that one. Easy to use. Start, stop, keep the changes, or don't. And the default is, in case something happens and you have to reboot, it will wipe out all the changes.
Nice, and you know it's safe that nothing can get through it to the operating system underneath.
I've tried and tried. You can't do anything about it. And the best part about at least this one is it's free.
Well, that's a good thing,
and it's only 3 megs.
Yeah.
It's tiny,
well, it
too.
Grows in size.
Well, yeah, it's a 3 meg download. Yeah,
yeah, it grows in size depending upon how much you save.
Right. The less stuff you save, the bigger it gets.
Right,
makes sense.
But for those people, especially like that last caller, or next to last caller,
yeah,
if you have a home network and you don't want the machine to get on the air, you just want it there. This will protect it.
Sounds great. Thanks, you, Vic.
How about that? All right.
I appreciate it. Thank you. I haven't tried it myself, but Vic sounds like he knows what he's talking about. So, it's an interesting concept. Lay a cloak over your computer, as long as you remember not to save it, and as long as you trust it that nothing gets through. That's an acceptable solution. Of course, you're still running XP, and you still have no. Now the problem becomes, do you have to save everything, or can you pick what you save, and will you know which things are bad and which things are good that you want to save into the operating system? So it's a whole different story. But we have time to talk to Roy from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Roy. What's your question? Or not. We don't know what happened to Roy. Roy, go bye-bye. Sorry, Roy. Call back. We'll be happy to talk to you. But until then, I should probably mention a couple of things that you might like to know. Windows 8, the start menu is set to return probably in August. What they're doing is we've seen prototypes now, and there's an alpha out that got leaked. And what it looks like is a hybrid of the old Windows 7 start menu mixed with some of the Windows 8 Live tiles along one side. So you get the worst of both worlds.
Well put. Well put.
You know, that's they say compromise is the art of making nobody happy.
Now, when did they say this is going to?
August.
Oh, because I had originally heard July for the beta.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the beta will be out in July, and then in August will be the real thing. So those of you who are desperate to get back the start button in Windows 8, here's your hope that it's coming back in August. And we now have Roy on the line from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Roy. What's up?
Thank you. Two things. Number one, what was the name of that program to overlay XP?
Time Freeze by Tool Whiz. Steve is putting a link up on the website, so you'll be able to go to our website and see it right there, big as life on the main page.
Okay. Second question is, there were some information on your email addresses using POP or IMAP?
For Time Warner people, yes.
Yeah, and I'm running Windows 7 Pro, and I'm trying to find out where to locate those addresses.
Again, on our website, there is a link.
No. Within Windows.
It would be in your mail reader program. So which mail reader are you using?
I'm using Windows Outlook.
What is it? Tools, accounts, I believe it is, in Outlook.
Yeah, it's part of setting up the accounts.
Okay, and I have two accounts. One is Roadrunner, and the other is Net Zero.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you make a new account and set it up for Time Warner IMAP. You might be able to change the Time Warner POP to IMAP, but most mail programs I've seen can't change. You actually have to make a new account for the IMAP.
Okay, so if I want to look at the addresses I have now, I would highlight the account or right-click it or something like that?
Yep, and there's a change settings or view details or something like that.
Okay. That's it.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
The thing, again, for those of you who are confused by the difference between IMAP and POP, POP actually downloads all of the email to your computer. Which was fine back in the day when people only had one computer.
And you dial into the internet, download your mail, and hang up as soon as possible because you paid by the minute.
Right. Nowadays, when you want to get the same email on your desktop, your laptop, your phone, your tablet, your Chromebook, your whatever, you want that mail to stay up on the server so you can get to it from all those things. And the way you do that is with IMAP because it keeps it there like that. So that music tells me we're done for another week. And there are those of you out there saying, not a moment too soon. And to those we say, but we're done for another week. You've wasted 2 hours of your life, Leah. Don't use this mic. And we'll be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 55 minutes after the hour. But don't go away because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. Luckily, Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. I see Michael has the big hammer with him today. That's right. Be afraid, George. Be very afraid. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.